there's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way. And we are live. Welcome, folks, to episode 3524 of the Survival Podcast. Yesterday, we dug deep into, well, the complete fiasco and total disgrace the Secret Service has become in the attempted assassination on Donald Trump. A lot of shit has come out since then, but that's not what we're going to talk about today. I feel like doing almost 2 hours of it yesterday was enough, and maybe some more stuff will come out in the future. It's getting worse by the moment as more and more information comes out. I will tell you one additional thing that I just picked up. The DEI Supreme Overlord running Secret Service stated apparently in an interview that one of the reasons they might not have put an agent or a law enforcement officer on the roof to guard the roof that was obviously where a sniper might shoot from, it was slanted and therefore it posed a risk. It was no more slanted than the roof that the counter-sniper team was sitting on the entire time. And I would expect that somebody who is qualified to be in Secret Service or even just your guard variety cop could handle a very lightly pitched freaking roof that a 20-year-old kid with an AR could handle. But that's not what we're going to talk about today. Instead of talking about the system, we're going to talk about existing outside the system in the world known as agorism. And this is something I haven't talked about for so long. The last show dedicated to this topic was at like the peak on the initial incline of COVID. I looked that up today to see. So we're looking at 2.5-3 years since I've actually dug into this subject. And I probably need to talk about it more because I have this flag for those watching the video version of the podcast, and far more people watch the, or listen to the audio than watch the video. But I get a lot of questions about the flag, especially from people that kind of find the show and come into it and are not familiar with our history and are not familiar with what this flag is. And for those that maybe have never caught a video, because there's a lot of you, it is a very simple flag. It is a black and gray flag with a 45-degree angle connecting the corners, and 50% of the flag is a gray, and 50% of the flag is a black. That represents gray markets and black markets and the interactive edge between the two. If that doesn't make sense to you, don't worry. By the end of today's episode, it will. This was all kicked off by a federal court right here in the great state of Texas, deep in the heart of Texas, right? So a federal court just said this whole thing where you can't make alcohol at home, you can't distill alcohol at home, bullshit. And we'll talk more about that and how this kind of leads into this discussion. We're going to talk about what a black market is versus a gray market. What is agorism in the most simple terms possible? What is that interactive edge all about? Why do most problems for people operating in the gray market actually originate with competitors in the quote-unquote white market? Does it actually start with law enforcement or code enforcement? It almost always starts with competitor Karen, who can't stand that you're doing things outside the system. A very famous example would be the gentleman, Michael, I can't think of his last name, that was killed in New York City by police officers chokeholding him. He had a heart attack for selling cigarettes on the street. That problem did not come because the NYPD are like, you know what we're going to do today? We're going to go find a guy and choke him out. We're going to look for a guy doing some petty bullshit that doesn't really matter and go fuck with him until we kill him. Not where it came from. Shopkeepers reported him and demanded that something be done. We'll talk about why that happens and how you need to understand that if you want to play in this space. Why would you do this anyway? I think there's people that misunderstand agorism, so they're like, well, if you can't take down the whole system with it, why bother? Well, that misses the whole point. That's not what agorism is about at all. It's not even really about directly weakening the beast of government, though there is some indirect things that do that. But, you know, it's less than a rounding error in the total national budget, all the agorism put together, outside of like the organized drug cartels anyway. But it has some real benefits. We'll talk about the role of Bitcoin, cash, and barter, balancing risk and reward, and I'll give you some examples of agorism, and I'm going to bet you there will not be a person that listens to this whether you consider yourself an agorist or not, whether you never heard the word until today, if you think everybody should obey the law all the time, and that's at least what you say, I bet you when I read this list, every single person in this audience, even if you just showed up today for the first time, I'll be like, well, I've done that, and I'll do it again, too. And that's what we're going to kind of wrap up with, the fact why agorism works, because most people already are one, even if they don't know the word. Before we do that, let's go ahead and take care of our sponsors of the day. Sponsor today, number one today, and it just worked out, though I probably would have arranged it once I came up with a subject for today. John Bush is doing a seminar series with the Live Free Academy, and it's called the Freedom Trinity Webinar. It's exactly what we're talking about today. It's how to use things like private membership associations and other legal framework to exist outside the system and do things the system says you can't do in a way that makes you very hard for the system to affect. I'm not an expert on private member associations. I think sometimes they're oversold, but I'll tell you what, I trust John to inform you correctly about the way these things work. If you want to know more about the Freedom Trinity webinar series, there's several dates. I think they're all the same. You can pick a date that works for you. Check the video links below. If you're on the audio, come look up the episode 3524. In the resource links, you will find a link. Get on over there, get registered today, and check this out. If you're not interested right now, you probably will be after today. Next up today, sponsor of the day number two is Above Phone. I've been working with Above Phone for just under a year now. Fantastic company. Heard about them for years before we started working together. Above Phone lets you take back your privacy and your technology from the big phone makers and the big cellular providers and the app makers as well. You see, here's the problem. You'll get a phone. I don't care if it's Android. I don't care if it's an iPhone. I don't care what it is. You use it with the operating system that it comes with, and you sign up for service through AT&T or T-Mobile or Verizon or whoever. You have three places that people are collecting, storing, and sharing your information. The phone manufacturer itself, the app programmers, and the carrier. They are all one way or another contributing to your data being stored and being transmitted and being sold. And even when they don't sell your data or give it to the government, then they hold on to it, and guess what happens? People hack that whole reservoir and steal all that data, like just happened to every AT&T customer. All your data from 2023 stolen in a giant data breach. You want to take it back? Use Above Phone. You can stop all of it, and when you're like, but I have to use this one app sometimes because, and it's not in their private app store. Okay, fine. Put it in a little jail cell. Only use it for what it's needed for, and at all other times, it's locked up and it can't rat you out. Check them out today. Again, abovephone.com. Remember, if you are an MSB member, you get 9% off at Above Phone, or I'm sorry, you get $75 off all phones that are available at abovephone.com, and that'll pay for your membership for a year and a half just on that one benefit. All right, so let's dig off into this. All right. Let's start off with the concept of agorism. I want to start off with the court decision. Now, this is a lower federal court. This is like first layer in federal court. So I know the government will appeal this. The government has unlimited resources. This will probably go into flux for a while. It likely, unless this like the next tier up in the system, in the first federal appellate court, if they come down on the same side this judge did, the government may give up then, especially because by that time you're probably looking at Orange Man Presidency 2.0, and this is probably not the thing that his DOJ will have a lot of time to worry about. They're going to have other things to worry about. A lot of haircuts are coming, okay? But if it only gets to the first appellate level and the appellate court agrees, it's probably a done deal. If it starts having overturn and return, it may end up all the way in the SCOTUS, Supreme Court of the U.S. And if it gets there with the makeup of that court right now, I cannot see the current Supreme Court overturning this ruling. I'm going to say, though, everything I'm going to teach you today and all should help mitigate this, but you have to treat this kind of like the pistol brace bullshit, right? The SIG pistol brace for ARs is an SBR. It's not an SBR. It is an SBR. It's not an SBR. It's an SBR, but it's not an SBR until you shoulder it. Like, and then you can get done up in all this interim by law enforcement. So be careful. Don't go out and start, like, open up your own YouTube channel talking about everything you're doing with distillation right away. But this is very encouraging, and it basically is going to take the concept of moonshining, which is, and what I mean by that is not the act of making the moonshine, but the act of selling the moonshine to somebody else. It's going to move it from a black market activity to what you would call a gray market activity. More on that in just a bit. But this is out of Reuters, totally legit, confirmed multiple sources. The U.S. ban on at-home distilling is unconstitutional, Texas judge rules. I want to say a couple things about why I think this will stick. But again, still be careful, because it takes the right person in the right place that wants to do harm to you for it to happen, including Karens that rat you out. So the reason that I think this is going to stick is because there's a lot of people already making moonshine, like on YouTube and Rumble and shit like that anyway, like openly doing it and no one going after them already. Like, this is one of those things, like, they're kind of like, yeah, it's kind of in a lot of ways a little bit like small amounts of marijuana or cannabis, even where it's still illegal. And the cop's like, I'm not fucking with this over a $110 ticket that the guy could fight in court and possibly. It's not worth it. I don't really care. I used to smoke pot when I was a kid or whatever. As long as you're not causing any trouble, I don't. It's illegal, but I'm going to leave them alone. There's a lot of that attitude in people doing home distilling already. That's why there is a home distilling organization, a home distiller society, that brought this case. And, you know, nobody's raiding their houses. So I really think this is like one of those things that, like, it's run its course. We realize how stupid it is, how it doesn't make any sense, and it's going to die finally. But what this judge said in his decision, and I thought this, and his last name is Pittman, was really worth stating because it fits the show perfectly today. Pittman said the ban, which is incorporated into two separate statutes, was not a valid exercise of Congress's taxing power, as it did not raise revenue and, quote, did nothing more than statutorily ferment a crime. That's a legalese term. What does it mean to statutorily ferment a crime? I like the word ferment in there, given we're talking about making ethyl alcohol. What statutorily ferment a crime means, that the thing becomes a crime for no reason other than the law says so. In other words, there wasn't a problem. You have no victim. Everybody was okay with it, really. People that complained about it were complaining about it like they don't like the color of somebody's shirt or some shit. And you were able to busybody get together and create a law connecting this activity to a secondary activity that maybe you did have the authority to regulate, but you pulled this thing in underneath it as, I need this thing to enforce this other thing over here. And when you understand how agorism works, you'll understand why that last piece, I need this one to enforce this one, isn't really, well, wrong. It's still unconstitutional. So I want to be clear on what this judge did not say. This judge did not say that, there he is. Just almost say, you know, there's a reason I'm using this guy. He did not say that TN Permaculture can fire up his still, make whiskey, and sell it to Agoras Tax Advice. And these two guys know each other, okay? Nice turnout tonight, by the way, right? He didn't say that at all. He said that TN Permaculture can fire up a still and make alcohol at home for his own personal use. And the reasoning there is the whole concept, and this is like the entire ATF is built on this too, is that the government's ability to tax alcohol is a significant form of revenue for the government. And that the Constitution does allow for the implementation of a tax on alcohol. Whether there should be or not, that is accurate. The Constitution, as written, does allow for alcohol or anything, actually, through act of Congress, to be taxed. But when you make it illegal to even make it for yourself, for home use, let's say, you've exceeded the constitutional mandate on Congress and the legislature and the executive branch as well, executing the legislature, because you don't actually protect tax revenue in any meaningful way. Yeah, Bill made his own whiskey, so he didn't go to the store and buy it, but he didn't create commerce, so there's no taxable event, so fuck off, you're wrong. It's only stood for like 120 years or some shit. But finally, somebody woke up and said, enough, niet, no more. So that's that ruling, or I should say opinion, because courts issue opinions, not rulings in reality, is what spurred today's concept, because now we're going to talk about what is agorism, black markets, gray markets, and how this moves the concept of home distillation from black to gray market if someone chooses to further flaunt the government and actually maybe do some commerce. Okay? So what is agorism in simple terms? Agorism is a piece of anarchism. In other words, not all anarchists would maybe be agorists, but all agorists would probably be anarchists, maybe would be one way to look at it. Another way to look at it would be, since the philosophy of anarchism is following the non-aggression principle, basically do not hurt people and do not take their stuff, anybody engaged in an agorist activity, whether gray or black market, that is not creating a victim, other than denying the state its ability to steal from you, would be an agorist. It is the concept that we should rely on each other instead of large corporations within the governmental framework for our needs. It doesn't mean the corporations in themselves are inherently evil. They are both evil and benevolent, depending on what they're doing on any given day. The power apparatus of the government is what gives them the ability to truly be evil by out-regulating their competition. Agorism is, well, I'm not going to go toe-to-toe with this giant brand, but I can take my own little piece of it my own little way. Being small and agile is an advantage as an agorist. You're not going to build a multi-billion dollar business as an agorist and stay out of prison perpetually in our current system. It's the small person. It's the person with the little business selling tacos on Tuesdays and Thursdays, right? That brings them into work and delivers them to the other offices and inside the place where they work in their regular job, and they pocket an extra $300 or $400 a week. And that never ends up on a schedule, you know, 1040 or a schedule C or anything like that. It just never happened. And I'm not deducting the meat and the tortillas, but I'm not reporting the revenue either. It just kind of never, me, you, and the fence post. That's a way to look at agorism. There's other flavors of it that we'll talk about today, but that's agorism. You doing business with another person, either as producer or consumer, in a way outside of their system of control. It's just that simple. What is a black market? Because there's two components to agorism, black and gray markets. A black market is an activity that is illegal completely all the way through. So let's look at something that is illegal, but not potentially immoral unless you were like selling it to kids or getting people hooked on it to bring them into the sex trade or something. Some form of hard drugs, let's say methamphetamine or heroin. Like, I know nowhere that those things are legal for home use and home production, right? Like, just happen to alcohol. It's illegal to possess it, it's illegal to make it, and it's illegal to sell it. There's no interactive edge. It's straight up black market, yet you could make an argument that it doesn't violate the non-aggression principle, so an agorist may choose to do business in that market. When I get done today, I think you'll understand why I would suggest that you do not. Regardless of my feelings about, like, doing heroin and meth is bad, okay, and it ruins your life, okay, so don't do it, okay? Beyond that, it's a bad idea. It can result in long-term looking out of bars. That is not a good way to fight for liberty and freedom. You can make a lot of money, but you have a real good chance to go to prison, including federal prison. So that's a pure black market. A gray market is a market where part of the activity is legal and part of the activity moves into the black market. That is this line. That is this interactive edge that we'll talk about more in a bit. Alcohol distillation at home, technically, because again, there's still room for the government to maneuver here. This hasn't been settled yet, okay? But as of right now, technically, there is no standing for the federal government to prosecute you for having a still and distilling alcohol in your kitchen for your own use. That activity has now been rendered legal by the judicial system, who has passed an opinion out that says this law is struck down. You do not have the right to enforce this anymore. However, me then, let's say, making some gin, putting it in nice bottles, and selling it to my neighbor, that's still illegal. But because it's on that interactive edge of gray and black, right, it's gray market because I have it, I give it to him. I really didn't do anything illegal. It's only when the money's exchanged that it becomes illegal. And you can figure out, and you will get more help in figuring out how you do that in a way that makes sense today, so that we stay out of, like, Club Fed, right? We don't want to go to Club Fed. We don't want to go to Club State, right, either, right? Like, we want to stay away from those things. It's very hard to effectively fight for liberty in a jail cell unless you want to be a Nelson Mandela or something like that. And most of us ain't going to be, even if we want to. So let's not do that. Now, I want to talk a little bit about part of that risk mitigation. Part of that risk mitigation is your biggest problems tend to originate. They don't terminate, but they originate with Karens. A colloquialism that we use a lot, but I think it's a perfect colloquialism because it started out with mostly women who cause shit by complaining, being offended, being upset, and report people for crap. That's kind of the origin of the term. And it's become this kind of all-encompassing term. Like boomer, right? I can't tell you how many times me at Gen X hear somebody say, okay, boomer, because I say something they don't like. But Karenism is a problem, and it really is the origin of most problems for people operating in the Agora space. And I think it was Michael Brown. I don't remember his name. Michael whatever. The big, heavyset dude who the police put in a chokehold, and he died in New York City. That was a classic gray market thing. So here's how that worked. And a lot of people, I think, even that are aware of the incident don't really know how the incident came to be. So New York City has its own level of insanity taxes, right? Like cigarettes are ATF, alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. Funny that those three ended up in one organization. Why? They are the three biggest barter items. The ATF is the enemy of fucking agorism, okay? Like, you go into any place where society has broken down, the currency has failed, and they're relying on barter. The most bartered things are alcohol, tobacco, and guns and ammo. All right? So they threw that all into one organization. That's how that got that way. It's why it's that way. So the tobacco thing. New York City has excessively taxed cigarettes beyond what even, let's say, New York State and certainly states like Virginia have. Okay, so this creates the opportunity that a good agorist looks for. You have a gray market, like I can walk around with packs of cigarettes on me and there's really nothing the cops can do about it. It doesn't become illegal until I sell it to you. And what he was doing is selling Lucy's, right? Not the girl name, Lucy's, like loose, right? And that just simply means that somebody could walk up to him and go, hey, man, I want two cigarettes. And he'd say, that's a dollar. Or I don't even know how much cigarettes cost. I don't smoke. But it was some amount that if you went into the store right over there and bought that pack of cigarettes, the individual price of cigarettes would be higher than buying them from this guy as Lucy's. That's all he was doing. Now, like I said, for all the shit NYPD took in this, and they certainly get some, okay, there wasn't like the chief sat down and went, today, guys, we're going out. We're going to bust some fucking heads. We're going to look for these assholes selling Lucy's. That's our real problem. Let's go do this. No. What happened was all these shop owners, they're paying ridiculous licensing fees to run their businesses and having to charge sales tax and all the extra taxes on top of these cigarettes, are looking out their window and watching people walk by and buy cigarettes from this guy, and they were the Karens. They're the ones that pick up the phone. They're the ones that called the police and said, hey, there's an asshole out here doing this thing right now. And this is where most of your problems will originate in this space. Competitors in the system that don't like you operating outside the system that see you as having an unfair advantage. It is an unfair advantage. It is an unfair advantage. Somebody's commenting about my shirt saying they remember the Dare shirts. I don't know if you've seen, this is one of John's shirts. And I don't know if you can see the whole thing, but it says Dare to resist your government. It's a play on the old school, you know, drunk driving issue. I got a quick story about that. A couple months ago, probably, I was wearing this shirt and I was at the liquor store. And there's a guy handing out samples of something, and it was just something I didn't really want to taste. It was something I didn't care for. And so he's doing the sample thing, and he goes, hey, you want to try some of whatever it was? And I'm like, nah, man, thanks. He sees my shirt, and he goes, oh, of course you wouldn't. I guess it disconnected for him a second that I'm standing in a liquor store, right? And I said, no, read it. So, yeah, dare to resist your government. Anyway, the Karens are going to be your biggest problem, but this also exists right on that interactive edge of where the opportunity lies. So one of the things that you would think is that people engaged in a business would be for opening up that business. Wrong. That's gilding. That's unions. That's protectionism. So in Texas, for example, around the 4th of July, you would not have a great opportunity to have a gray market fireworks business. You wouldn't. And the reason is the way that a fireworks gray market would work is you're in a state that doesn't allow the sale of fireworks, but allows the possession and discharge if you have them. And there are states that have that, especially like in areas that are considered safe to do it. And so when I was a kid, where we lived in Florida, it was definitely the case that you could have and detonate fireworks where they were considered safe and not get in trouble. But if you set up a fireworks stand back then, you would go directly to jail. But if you drove your ass up to South Carolina, you could buy all the fireworks you want. And then you could drive back down to Florida and sell them to people. And that was illegal, but nobody gave two shits. Same thing when I lived in Pennsylvania. You could buy fireworks back in the early 2000s in Maryland, and I had a friend that for 4th of July every year, he would run down to Maryland. It was, you know, a six-hour drive, if that. Buy an assload of fireworks, come home, and do a great big display in his backyard. He was also doing agorism in a different way. He didn't sell the fireworks. He could have, but what he did is he ran this big event, had everybody come, did like barbecue and shit, but he charged everybody like 20 bucks a head for the party. And he had about, he had figured out about $8 a head into it. So he was making money on just that. And that was another example of, and that was like, was that even a gray market? It was perfect gray market because there was alcohol there, but you weren't buying it one off. So the whole, do you need a bar? I don't know. It's just beer in a cooler, right? See, these are how you finagle this. But the reason I even went down the line with the firearms is I know a guy lives literally right over there, right across the street, one house over. His family has had a permit to sell fireworks in the state of Texas. You can only use that permit. It's like 3 weeks a month. It's like 2 weeks around the 4th and 1 week before, between Christmas and New Year's. That's the only time. It's 3 weeks a year they can use their permit. And they have a completely above-board, non-agorist business, and they sell only in that limited time frame. That makes Texas not a great market to have an agorist fireworks business because you have to be able to acquire them and sell them at a profit to make it worth doing. They can buy it wholesale and sell it retail right here, and everybody knows that, so everybody buys their fireworks in those 3 weeks. So the only time you would have that opportunity, somebody wanted fireworks in March and were really willing to pay for it. You see how that works? Very simple. But who's most likely to rat you out? I love my neighbor. He probably wouldn't do it to me personally. But I bet you if somebody had an unlicensed fireworks stand down by the convenience store up that way, he might just make that fucking phone call, wouldn't he? Because I'm doing everything right. I pay my fee every year. I have one of the, there's only so many of them available. They're kind of like liquor licenses in Pennsylvania. There'd be more bars, but there's only so many liquor licenses, and somebody has to go out of business or die to have that license sold, or taxi cab medallions in New York City. If you want a taxi medallion in New York City, they can sell for as much as $1 million. They're not going to issue more, and somebody has to sell theirs. That all is opportunity. But who hates Uber? Taxi cab drivers. You see how that works? Everything that decentralizes and improves service and lowers pricing, government and guilds hate. That's the opportunity, and it's where the risk you rub up against the risk. So the ultimate opportunity for doing well as an agorist, you would think, is, well, in a place where I can do anything I want, maybe. Maybe. If the place you can do anything you want is relatively small, and there's not a lot of people that in that area want to compete in that space because they're just not going to go into that business, and the place you can't do it is like right over here, and people can drive to you and buy from you, so that what you're doing is completely legal, but it wouldn't be legal where they live. Okay, yeah, that's an opportunity. Those are unique. However, I would say the way we do business with our ducks and our duck eggs is exactly that. What we do would be much more difficult to do in a city limit than out here in the county. Okay? Is it really agorism? I don't know. I don't know. I mean, yes, on some way that, you know, I don't really want to talk about, but straight up the way that it is, not really, because it's not even a gray market. It's more of a status jujitsu. I've occupied a space outside of the regulations. Okay? But what you really want as an agorist is the thing that you're doing to actually be illegal. And no one have a permit that gives them a protected status to be able to do it, or the protected status costs so much that you can undercut them even without access to their supply line or through an alternative supply line. In other words, if the thing is completely legal, you have to compete. If it's the food industry, you have to compete with Kellogg's. If it's the shoe industry, you have to compete with Nike. If it's the electronics industry for communication devices, you have to compete with Apple and Android. That's very, very difficult. That's incredibly difficult to do. I'm not saying you can't do it, but I'm saying you might not even want to try to do that in an agorist fashion. You would do that through innovation. You're going to build a phone, maybe even using their own phones, that you can use against them like Above Phone does. All Above Phone does is take a standard freaking phone. I mean, literally has the Google logo right on the box, strip the OS and install something like Graphene and reconfigure the software inside the hardware and then resell the device at a profit because you don't know how to do that or you don't want to learn how to do it and you're willing to pay somebody to do it for you and hold your hand all the way through. This is a pseudo-agorist market because there's nothing being done here that's even remotely gray. It's just creative and innovative, but yet it stands right in the face of its own competition. An agorist market is more you have to do something that is technically not allowed and do it in a way that there's a lot of things you can do. One is, if I get caught doing this, it's going to cost me the first offense. I'm not going to jail. It's not a felony. It's a $500 fine, and I can say I didn't know. And I can make $500 a month. And if I do that for 10 years and I get a $500 fine, I kind of feel like Boeing, right? You fined me 0.02% of my revenue. I don't really care. That's one mitigation strategy. But in all of this, we also have to look at what does it really accomplish. I've had a lot of people say to me, Jack, you're such an idealistic person. You're so naive. You think your little stupid gray and black flag and your little duck egg business and, you know, your little mead group that you used to have on Facebook, the underground meadery that actually wasn't mine, it was Michael Jordan's, but I've heard this little thrown at me, actually matters and makes a difference. This is going to fight the government. It isn't. Well, see, here's the thing. I don't give a fuck, to an extent anyway, about fighting the government for everybody's sake. I don't. I want to empower you to fight the government for yourself. But from my standpoint, the way I fight the government is, one, I have a really good, and I mean a really good CPA, who knows how to work the 90% of the tax code that tells me how to legally get out of what the 10% says I have to pay. That's one way I fight government. But that's for me. It's not for you. Me telling you that that is possible is for you. In the end, it's up to us to fight for our fucking selves first. So what does it really benefit? Well, let's look at my duck egg business. Again, I would call that a quasi-agorist business because there's nothing illegal about it, which is why I can openly talk about it. But let's just say that it was illegal for me to sell those eggs for whatever reason. It's not. Let's just say that it was, and I had figured out how to do it anyway. Yeah? Who benefits? Me. I get money. I get money from a system outside of their control. So I benefit. Who else benefits? I'd love somebody in the chat, because this is not a hard question. This is like a first grade, maybe kindergarten level question. Who else benefits from my duck business other than me? Waiting for the feed to catch up here. Let's check in on Rumble, because I know someone's got that answer. Rumble, you guys can chat to me over there. I see you. You're on the other screen. Let me come back over here. Has anybody got it? Yeah, who else benefits? Come on, guys. The customer. Victory Garden, Jacob, Mick229, I'll just said the customer. You're correct. Who else needs the benefit for it to matter? Who should benefit? Two-party transaction. Who are you concerned about having derived a benefit in a two-party transaction? The two parties. I don't need okay. That's actually very creative. My vendors, my suppliers benefit too. Okay, so now he's making a very good point. My vendor, for example, now would be somebody not in the gray market, but they still benefit, don't they? So Tony's Seed and Feed, which is about 90 miles north of me, just a few weeks ago I drove my little truck up there and I got a half a ton of feed. Now, if I don't have customers, I don't have as many ducks as I do, and I don't buy that much feed. So that's actually, I didn't even think of that. But you're right. My vendor and my customer and I, we all benefit from my agorist activity. That's why it matters. It doesn't need to go any further than that. Because I want you to think about some realities here. Let's say you were 18 years old when somebody exposed you to this thinking. Okay, somebody exposes you to this thing at 18 years old, and you get your little 18-year-old ass to work, and you're able to generate not even a huge amount of money, $1,000 a month from your agorist activity, and you do that from the time you're 18 to the time you're 28 for just one decade, 10 years. And in that 10-year period, you take 25% of your agorist money and you put it in the most boring, most conservative, tax-deferred IRA, Roth IRA-style investment that you can. And maybe it's not the $250 you earn, because that's out. Like, that needs to be money laundered, right? Because it's gray market business. But because you have it, and because you can go to the store and buy your groceries with cash, you have other money that you gain from your, you know, white market activities that frees up $250 to go into that retirement account. And all you do for 10 years is put that $250 into that retirement account. At 28, you decide, fuck it. I have saved enough money. I'm going to rely on Social Security. And all you do is leave that money alone until you retire at 65. You just guaranteed yourself that you will retire a multimillionaire. So you explain to me how that doesn't matter. You'll say, well, people won't do it. Well, no. I just showed you how you could channel cash flow to retire a millionaire in a very painless way. The fact that you didn't do it or somebody else didn't do it doesn't matter. That's how powerful the cash flow is. I read a study, and I'm going to double it. I'm going to double the number because it was like 10 years ago, and God knows shit's more expensive. But 10 years ago, I read a study that said the average family in America who goes into bankruptcy could have never entered bankruptcy with an additional $200 in income had their lifestyle remained the same. $200 separates people from bankruptcy. Now, if you spend the money as fast as it comes in and expand your lifestyle, that goes away. Again, It's up to you to channel your income. But so double it to $400. Is there anybody here that really thinks I could not find a way doing something that's side hustle, agorism put together and make $400 a month? Well, then if you did that and you just had the income, that's all they said you had to do to stay out of bankruptcies, not expand your lifestyle and have the extra income. So even if you pissed it away until you got into trouble, but you weren't using it to incur more debt, once the debt became a problem, if you had the $400 and you stopped pissing it away, you could stay out of bankruptcy. Does it matter? I think that matters. Are you starting to see what I'm saying here? It doesn't have to stop the government. It doesn't have to close the Department of Education down. Let's look at it that way, right? So the Department of Education, I would love to see it go away. There's even been some talk from Orange Man's side about getting rid of it. I don't think that's going to happen. He appointed as the Secretary of Ed during his first administration. I can't think of her name, but she's out of the Amway stuff. She's a huge homeschooler, hates the Department of Ed. If it didn't happen then, I can't see it happening now. But let's say that it could. But when you homeschool your children, and one of the reasons is I don't like federal mandates on education interfering with our local education, screwing my kid's brain up, because it does. And somebody says to you, it doesn't matter because Department of Education is still there. They still piss away $70 billion. Who does it matter to? You, your children, and eventually their children. And all the people they interact with and all the things they're able to do in life because they think differently than a program drone that they can do as they mature, grow up, and establish themselves in the world and the impact they have. I think that matters. So this idea that we need to be anarchists or we need to be agorists or libertarians only to change the government is asinine because you're not going to do it. The government is run by the collective will of the people. I know you don't believe that's true because it's the promise. And so when you see it delivered, it doesn't look like what you think it should be. But remember, you know, the whole republic versus democracy thing, but that's not how it works, is it? Really about 51% of the people get to decide how the rest of us live. I know our founders gave us a system to prevent that. And Lysander Spooner said all the way back in the 1800s, what? Either the Constitution doesn't prohibit the government from doing this shit, or it's incapable of stopping the government from doing this shit. Either way, it's unfit to exist. So it doesn't work. What works is you looking around yourself and saying, these are the things I influence, these are the things that I control. And the things that are further outside these spheres, those are the things that concern me. While I'm not going to ignore the things that concern me, I'm going to put 90% of my focus, energy, and effort on the things I influence and control. Stephen, Covey, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, a little bit expanded. He had circle of influence and circle of concern, just two. I added, and I think other people have done so as well, and I think independently it just makes sense, circle of control. Influence is one thing, control is another. I influence you as a listener, but in the end, I don't control you. I control right now myself. I could decide, fuck this, I don't feel like doing it today. See ya, and shut off the feed. I control that. I control that I'm not going to, that even though my granddaughter just got home and she's throwing a fit out there, I'm going to let my wife deal with that while I'm podcasting because I can hear her out there throwing a little bit of a fit and a tantrum, and I'll deal with it later. I control that. I don't control her. My wife doesn't control her. Now, we control certain things that will be used to correct that tantrum that's going on right now. It's that simple. And so when we look at agorism as the ultimate in looking around and saying, what do I control? What value do I have? How can I transact that value with somebody else willing to return value to me? It matters. If you don't think it matters, then you don't think having a job matters. All you're doing is creating an alternate source of income on your own terms and saying, I don't really care that Karen over there says I'm not supposed to, since it, and this is the key. If it doesn't violate the principle of non-aggression, if it doesn't violate the golden rule, right, of libertarianism, not the Bible, don't hurt people, don't take their stuff. As long as I've been there. So Because I've had people get upset with my videos about agorism. I have a bunch of them on the channel, if you look up, that aren't necessarily podcasts. And I've had people say shit like, agorists think it's okay to sell your children into slavery. I don't even answer people like that. Have you ever noticed that, though? You get these people that say absolutely preposterous, ridiculous shit, and they expect you to debate them as though they merit debate. You know, I had yesterday when I talked about the Trump issue, I had quite a few people pop up here, there, and everywhere. It was all staged. And I'm just like, well, you're retarded. And then they go off on this. They're totally offended that you just wrote them off as retarded and you didn't engage them in debate. You're not worthy of my effort. That circle of control. This is the mindset you have to come out. Otherwise, you get into trouble. Because it is very important that you balance risk and reward and staying out of any real trouble. So the taxi medallion is a perfect example. There's lots of unlicensed taxis in New York City. And what does it cost me to be in that business legitimately? $1 million to buy a medallion. If I can make $200,000 a year as a taxi driver in New York City, and you can, and I get fined $50,000 after 5 years of doing it, and I still haven't spent $1 million on the medallion, what the fuck ever. As long as I'm not in federal penitentiary, I don't really give a shit. I'm thinking like the rich capitalist cronies now. Well, they fined you $200 million. Yeah, but they bought $40 billion worth of airplanes for me. So I don't really give a fuck. That's the mindset. You have to balance risk and reward. What is the risk? What is the reward? And what is the consequence of being caught? In a lot of situations, the cost of being caught the first time is somebody from the department is making you sad issues you a piece of paper that says cease and desist. All right. Okay. Sure. I'll do that. I'll get right on that right now. Thank you, Karen. Bye-bye. I didn't know. Okay. And then you either do something else or you alter the way that you're doing it. John Bush, I cannot remember exactly the issue here, but it had to do with kratom, and he was doing kratom for like a small fee, like at a public place. And Austin PD or whatever somehow shut him down. And somehow he altered this to where the kratom was a sample, but there was still a fee to be there or something like that at bookstores. I don't remember exactly what it was. But that way he could cover the cost of the sample without breaking the law. And when they came back, they went, I don't know what you're talking about. How is this? And they couldn't come up, and they went away. They were like, we really don't like this. I really don't like you. I don't know what we're going to do about that. Right? So you have to be creative, and you have to figure these avenues out into how to deal with it. Let's talk about, like, I really want to talk about just some ideas. And I'm not saying to go do any of these things. I'm just going to say, when I get done with this list, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, I got 7 plus a question, and I'll say it right now. What can you think of? So if you are in the live chat right now, and you can think of an agorist activity that you or many people participate in all the time without even thinking about it, put agorist in all caps and then the activity. And I'll try to highlight those. And if they're not in my list, I'll read them at the end of this list. All right. So one would be poker nights and betting pools. So you know when you have that guy at the office and you guys are going to bet on the Sweet 16 and he has brackets you fill out, whoever's bracket is the most. I've never done that, so I really don't know exactly how it works. But whoever has the best bracket, I guess, by the end wins the pool from all the money that go in to the pool. Like all the 50 guys that do it. Like I had guys try to pull me all the time into fantasy football. Fantasy football, you all go over to your brother-in-law's house, drink beer, draft, and then everybody puts money in. That's gambling. That's illegal. There's probably a cop sitting there with you. He doesn't give a fuck. That is agorist activity. Have that one, but I'm going to start anyway just because it's interesting when you come up with what's on my list. But good job, Aaron. So all of that is not just the bookie, right? That's a perfect example too. Most people that like to bet on sports, they have a bookie that they'll call and do this with. I'm talking, though, more about just, like I said, the pools, the brackets. I mean, we did this in high school. I never liked basketball, and that seemed like where everybody wanted to do it was around the college Sweet 16, so I just didn't participate. I had reps when I was working for a company called Fluke Networks. Some of my sales reps, they were big into fantasy football, and they're like, "Why don't you get into fantasy football with it?" I'm like, how much is it to get in? They're like, $50. Can I just give you $50 and you leave me alone? It's not my thing. I don't even care about the money, right? I'm not going to pay attention to it, right? I'm not going to pay attention to it because I don't care about it, but it doesn't mean I'm opposed to it. But most people I know have somewhere or another participated in an activity like that, and the guy running it that takes a piece, that's agorism. That's agorism. Poker nights, again, like, I knew this guy who's one of my best friend's fathers, and he'd gotten kind of down on his luck financially, and he was in a place where this makes a lot of sense. He's in Louisiana. Gambling's legal in certain places and in certain situations, but you got to pay a big fee to do it, and where he was, you couldn't do it. So he did it anyway. He had a huge poker game. I mean, it started Friday afternoon and went till freaking Sunday afternoon, okay? His daughters acted as waitresses. They used chips that were cashed in and out like a casino. Trust me, cops were there at the table playing the game. He fed the shit out of people. I mean, absolutely fed the shit out of people at these events. It was all covered. And people tipped the daughters in chips for, like, serving drinks and shit. He stayed out of the poorhouse running weekend poker games. That's about as big as I think you'd want to get, and you'd have to be in his unique situation. Trust me, this boy was friends with the local sheriff who wasn't going to do shit, especially if no Karen said anything. He had about 12 acres of land, and his house was dead center of it, and so no one saw nothing, no one complained. Plus, if in a part of Louisiana, this was being done, if you're a Karen, you might not wake up one day. And it might not have nothing to do with the guy running the poker. I'm just saying your neighbors don't appreciate what you did and you might disappear, or at least your life might become really uncomfortable. He found a perfect little niche that let him get bigger than most of these things should. But he paid his mortgage, his bills, everything for several years off of those games. And he did a good job for people, or they wouldn't have come. Food service by private sellers, roadsides, etc. So I stopped and bought them one time. They weren't good, so I won't buy them again, and I'm not big on carbs anyway. But there is a tamale guy. If you go down the road from me a bit and a couple miles down toward the state highway, sits out in a church parking lot. It's just one sign, this big, white, with red letters, handwritten, it says tamales. All right, he sits there. He's in the city limits, so it's technically illegal, but nobody cares. It's perfect agorism. Plus, he's on the church's property. The church is an actual church that actually does what churches say they do and says, this gentleman needs to make money, and instead of welfare or donations, he's willing to sit here and sell his wife's tamales. Apparently, the people at that church like his tamales because they buy the crap out of them when church lets out on Sunday. He's there basically Friday, Saturday, and Sunday every week. He's there for a few hours in the morning, and he goes home. That's agorism. He's not licensed. Is it under cottage industry? Maybe, but even if the making of the tamales is under a certain amount of volume and sits under the cottage industry laws in Texas, the act of being out selling them in public in that way is technically illegal. Doesn't matter. Have you ever bought food from a roadside person other than like a licensed food truck? You're an agorist. You're the customer of an agorist. That makes you party to agorism. You're an agorist. Okay. Working under the table makes you an agorist. Have you ever had a job in your life where you paid cash and you didn't immediately go write it down so you could report it to the government to pay taxes on it? Anybody? Anybody out there that's done that? You are an agorist. That is an example of agorism. My first real job, I worked for a dude named Muskrat Purcell. He owned a junkyard. I went there on Saturday mornings, rode my bicycle there. That's how young I was. I had my own tools. I kept them in his trailer. I had a set of keys. I'd go in the trailer. He had a list for me. What needed to be, it was a parts pulling job. What needed to be pulled and where I could find the car. I'd pull all the parts. I'd put them in bins with labels on them. In his drawer, there would be a stack of bills. I was paid piecework, and it was for last week's work. I take the money, and I went on my way. And I did that for about a year, and I made money doing that. And all of my family members who were big time taxed the rich Democrats that thought we should just tax the shit out of people. Well, they would ask me, hey, buddy, I hear you're working for Muskrat at his junkyard pulling parts. Yeah. You know, my uncles who were all about unions and democratic politics thought JFK was God. This is a long time ago. JFK was only 20 years dead, right? Like, let's say, well, good boy. You're good on you. That's right. You get paid under the table. Don't let those bastards have your money. They were rigorous, too. They're talking all this shit about supporting tax policy, but when you circumvent it, it's okay. That's a rigorous mindset. How about just paying cash with a wink and a nod, right? You go to the local mechanic instead of Amco or whatever, or you know, Pet Boys or whatever the hell it is, and he's Bill's Garage, and Bill says, well, that's going to cost you $500 today to get that job done. And you say, Bill, well, what if I pay you cash? Now, well, you ain't paying merchant fees, so they give you a discount. That's 3%, but when Bill does the job for $400 versus $500 and gives you 20% off, you know what he's doing. You don't care, and he doesn't care. You give him $400, that never happened. Agorism. If you've ever taken cash or paid cash and you kind of knew what was going on, that's agorism. You see what I'm saying? Most people already are doing this. We're predisposed to look for good deals and to say, I don't give a shit what everybody else is doing. If this is between me and this other person, it's our business, not theirs. That internal moral compass, that's what's at play in this. How about all forms of barter, trading with a neighbor, barter blankets like we do at events? That's all agorism. Do you know what the federal government says you're supposed to do when you barter? They create a double tax situation. You want me to explain what I mean by that? Let's say that I'm good at fixing plumbing. I can fix basic plumbing problems. And I'm a handyman. And I say to you, and I'm an above business board handyman. I report all my revenue. And you say, I need this work done. And I look at it, I said, that's going to be like $200. You go, I'm really kind of short on cash right now, but I know that you do haircuts. And I'm like, I don't need cash. I got a few kids. They got to get their hair cut every so often. Tell you what, you give me $200 worth of haircuts over however long it takes you to do that for my family. I do the work and we call it even. Okay, if we then go ahead and do what the government says to do next, which nobody does, it's not agorism. If we do that and it ends there, no money transpired, value was exchanged, no taxes were collected, it's agorism. What does the government say you're supposed to do? We're both supposed to report it as though we both made $200. Really? We both record it as a profit. We get no expense against our side of the equation. It's stupid. There should be no tax on that, morally and legally. I'm not saying there isn't, because the tax guidance from the government is, and if Agora's tax advisor is still here, he's an attorney, he'll tell you. I'm dead on with this. The IRS says, and let's say it was me and Dark Horse, because Dark Horse is here in the chat. Dark Horse and I make that deal. He's a barber. He cuts my hair for 6 months, whatever it is to make up $200, I do $200 of value in plumbing. The government says, the IRS says, Dark Horse should write down $200 in barter revenue. And I should write down $200 in barter revenue as one entry, single entry accounting. No corresponding expense, which is ridiculous. I have the expense of my labor and so does he. But that's what they want. When you say, fuck you, there's nothing you can do about this. I'm not even going to talk about it, and we're just going to do it. Agorism. So if you've ever traded, like you said to your buddy, hey, man, look, I know you need to get your car fixed. I need someone to come over and help me put some walls up on my shed. I need two sets of hands for that. How about I come over this week and you come over next week? And you guys don't report that to the government. You just had a classic value exchange of agorism. Now, a lot of people would say, well, he's my friend, I would do it anyway. Isn't that the point? Isn't that the get out of jail card? Like, even if somebody tried to say, hey, man, he helped me, I helped him. I didn't ask him for nothing. He didn't ask me for nothing. We don't balance the scales here constantly. We don't have an abacus. We don't keep records on this. I did a thing for him. He did a thing for me. Me, you, and the fence post, as Gamer Time is saying, right? That is agorism. Okay? How about an unlicensed or unpermitted swap meet or farmer's market? You go to a farmer's market and the organizer has a permit and it's all controlled and they say only 5 people that sell cucumbers are allowed in the door and the government gets their piece and all that. Not agorism. Somebody with a field in an unincorporated part of the county sticks up a sign that says Bill's Farmer's Market and says fuck you to the world and starts running it, and it's just really hard to get at Bill because of how he structures things. Maybe he uses a PMA or something. Sorry, Frank, you can't come in. That little 10-star doesn't mean nothing. It's a private area. It's a member's area only. Yeah, do you have a membership? No. You want to buy one? Where's your sponsor, Frank? Yeah, you see, our membership program requires a sponsor to become a member. I don't think I want to sponsor you today, Frank. Yeah, you can't come in. Go get a warrant. What's he going to get a warrant for? I think they're selling tomatoes. I mean, I'm not saying it couldn't eventually be done, but I'm saying that, like, timing would be important with this, too. What happens when nothing's going on or everybody gets there and, oh, we're just all sharing food for free. Here's a tomato. Get out of here, Bill. Right? Like, there's different ways to do this. That would be a form. So if you've ever been to a swap meet that's not permitted, let's say you go to an event, and that event even is a permitted event. But they let people throw tables out and sell stuff at the event. They don't even charge anything to put a table. They just figure, like, if that's there, then there's more value to the event. What if you go to an event? I'm not saying it ever happens here or anything, but they have a thing called the selling of the things, and they just put a whiteboard up there, and you just write your name and say what you have. And then at random, people go up there and go, oh, I'd be interested in one of those. And they come to you and say, are you Frank? And you say, I'm Frank. You, oh, you have these smokers or something, right? And you say, yeah, I got those. How much? At $20? And you guys, that's agorism. Anybody ever done any of this stuff? Any of you either are like, agorism is stupid. I'm not doing that. Or didn't know what agorism was until today. And you're going, I do all this shit? You're an agorist. Isn't that cool? That's why it works. Handyman services. Most handyman services are agorist, at least at times. At least at times. Okay? I don't know, Dark Horse. We'll talk about that in a minute. I'm not sure if that is agorism or not. Maybe it could be, depending on how you got it in the first place. Here's what I mean. So there's a gentleman that he kind of had a life crisis, and I don't really use him anymore, but he's the son of my next-door neighbor. Pretty good handyman. One of the first things I'm looking for in a handyman or when I move to a new place is to find a handyman. There's shit that I can do that I don't have time for. I'd be better off working my business and do it. There's shit that I can do, but I don't want to do it. Just don't like it. And there's shit that I probably could do, but I won't do a really good job of it. I'm going to have to look at it or rely on it, and I don't want to mess it up. All of those I'll use a handyman service for if I can find one. Okay, this guy's name is John, and I always paid him cash. I never asked for a receipt. I'll let you figure it out from there. That's agorism. When you have the, let's go back to the auto shop. Now you got the handyman. Handyman comes in and goes, gutters on your roof? Yeah, $1,000. And you say, what if I pay cash? And he goes, $800. Doesn't even negotiate. It's immediately, you know what happened. Ever do it? Either side of the deal. See, agorism is not a thing that a person does. You have to have at least two parties. You have to have the person running the operation and the person that is the customer. And as was pointed out earlier, and I think it's really interesting, you also probably have a supply chain. Somewhere in this, there is a supply chain. Right? Somewhere in this, there is a supply chain. Like, even if you say, well, I grow my own food. And I sell the food. Do you buy seed? There's a supply chain. Do you irrigate? And the irrigation requires electricity, and there's some supply chain in 99% of all of this. So there's really three parties. But you need two, seller and buyer, right? And sometimes it's seller and buyer, and sometimes both sides are kind of a seller. When we're selling, we're trading labor, or we're trading two different products in a barter, we're also kind of both the seller and the buyer. Yeah. So handyman services, especially if they're unlicensed or for cash only. What if you're running a handyman business? Technically, you're supposed to be licensed, but you're not, and your customers don't care, and you're careful about the jobs you take and what you do. You even pay all your taxes and report your revenue. At least you report all your revenue. People pay you with PayPal or Venmo or anything like that, and you write off all your expenses and your mileage. And by the time it's all said and done with, you don't pay dick for taxes, because when you're writing off mileage in a business like that, you don't have much income to pay tax against. Agorist? I'd say at least partially. Ever do it? Ever hire someone that does it? You're an agorist. Child care services from a neighbor. So this is something my niece was doing for a while until a Karen messed it up on. And the Karen that messed it up, can't stand this bitch, don't even know her, never met her. My niece's husband's ex-wife is the one that caused it. So what my niece was doing, she was studying for her degree, and she was doing it from home. She was doing remote learning. This was way pre-COVID. And she was babysitting like four or five kids at any one time. The families of these kids were paying her to babysit. And that was it. And it went on for a couple of years, and it was fine. Everybody benefited. Nobody complained about how the kids were being taken care of. It was a small number of kids, and they were older kids. They weren't like babies in diapers or something like that. So they just kind of needed to be looked after. And they weren't always all there at the same time. These two kids would be here, and then they're gone, and then these two kids are here, and sometimes there's more. And their kids were kind of helping in the whole situation. And this enabled her to study and pursue her degree and still have an income. The ex-wife that just wanted to cause trouble reported it as an unlicensed daycare, and they got shut down. But nothing happened to them. They just said, you have to stop doing it. So what was the consequence of not doing it in the first place? They would have gained nothing. They got 2 years of income and suffered no real consequence other than losing what they didn't already have. That is a classic judgment of risk versus reward. And because their situation changed and they didn't want to do it anymore, they don't do it anymore. She has a job now, right? And she likes her job, so she's not going to do this anymore. But they ended up moving. When they moved, they could have started it all back up again and nobody would have known, right? There's a lot that can be said for the more flexible you are, the more you can do. And let's talk. I said, what can you think of? So let's go in here and see what people thought of. Agorist. The Agorist salesman for Agorist people become a reseller of a clientele portal. Not really sure what you're getting at there, Victory Garden, but maybe you're talking about running something kind of like a Silk Road Lite. I guess that would be agorism. Yard sales. Yard sales are always agorist to a point. All right. What are we actually avoiding? One thing we usually avoid in an agorist situation where otherwise we would have to pay a fee is something like a sales tax. So yard sales by nature are second sale goods. And in most places they're not sales tax subjected anyway, but I don't know anybody that like adds up, hey, we made $1,400. Let's make sure we tell our accountant when we pay our income tax. Most places yard sales are legal. Some places they're not. People do them anyway. That'd be another. So agorism is in tiers or levels or in how many ways. So I like that. Dark Horse says self-custody, non-KYC Bitcoin. I think it depends on how you got it, because if you received it, paid taxes on it, there's not really any agorist activity there other than avoiding the banks. But if Bill paid you for your pears and he bought, like, he was making a big old, he's an agorist too, he's going to make some pear branding now that it's legal, and you sell him like several bushels of pears for like $50 and you don't pay tax on it, that's agorism. Even if it's cash, Bitcoin just changes the form of value. And I think that Bitcoin and other things like that play a pretty big role in this, because They are portable, and they expand the range of agorist activity. So if my agorist activity is consulting, and it's not, so don't ask because I don't do it, but let's say that I did only remote permaculture consulting. And the way I did that was what Nick Ferguson does, right? You can walk around with your phone. I give you a form. You fill it out. You give me overhead views of your place from Google Maps so I know I'm looking at the right place. And you walk around your property with a phone. And then I write up recommendations for you, and I sell that to you for $250. If we do it cash only, you got to get the money to me. If it goes through the bank, there's a paper trail. Right? If I take the money through the bank on a tertiary way like PayPal, there's a paper trail. There's a 1099-K comes out the other. And if I have 100 customers, all that shit's right there. But if you pay me in Bitcoin, I'm just saying you can figure it out for yourself from there. Cakes, other catering, mobile, shade tree mechanic, and bartering. I think we covered all those, but absolutely. Cakes would just be a form of food. But that would be an interesting thing. You know that there are all kinds of licenses around things like doing people's nails for cosmetology and shit like that. Haircuts, like you have to be licensed to charge money for haircuts in the state of Texas, but I know plenty of people that cut people's hair for money. And they don't have shit. They do it in their own home. That would be another example. Backyard sale of plants. Yeah, absolutely. That would be agorist. And so I do agorism when I make, I didn't do it this year, but usually I make a shitload of sweet potato slips. I just didn't grow any this year. Didn't feel like it. And usually I sell a bundle of 10 for $10 on Nextdoor. And I'll make, you know, a couple hundred. And so, you know, it's not a lot of money, but, you know, it's a couple grand, cash money, dollar a plant, right? It's a couple hundred dollars, right? It's a couple hundred bucks. And it's not a lot of work, and it's agorism. You could do more than that. I sell Salatin-style pastured chickens for cash only. Yeah, that would be agorism. It's classic agorism. Business coaching in groups, depending on how you charge and what you do. Absolutely, that could be. Anything can be agorist depending on what you're doing. Matthew says babysitting, pet sitting. Yeah, pet sitting. I have a friend who ended up with a multi-six-figure business pet sitting. By the time it was that big, she was not doing it in an agorist fashion anymore. But it started full-on agorist. Until she built up enough clientele to have enough cash flow to have to worry about it, it was just side hustle cash money. And when she started to get bigger and people wanted to pay with checks and wanted receipts and different things like that, then she went legitimate. Sometimes agorism is a transitional model because you can't afford to go white market out of the gate, but you can get started as an agorist. That's another thing too. And there's also even some carve-outs of certain things under a certain amount of money. The term is de minimis. You don't have to comply in certain situations. Aaron says babysitting, which that was the first one that came in. I said, you know, we already had that one there, but yeah. And I want to say just to Bogan, I think it's Bogan, Bogdan says, I just want to say thank you for all you do. It's greatly appreciated. Thank you for your hard work. Thank you, Bogdan. That was a $20 super chat. Super chats always immediately get starred, whether I see them or not. Homemade catering, someone else just said. This is all good stuff. So you guys all understand what I'm saying. The reason most people are open to agorism when they really understand it is because they're already doing it. Work under the table. Get paid under the table. Pay somebody under the table. Pay somebody cash. Pay somebody in Bitcoin with a wink and a nod. It's all forms of agorism. And all this is that the market itself is more powerful than regulations upon the market. In the end, people naturally seek freedom. It might seem completely the opposite. And in the macro and everybody shouting at each other and political tribalism and stuff like that, yeah, people actually crave tyranny, I think, at this point, because they don't like what the other people are doing. Jesse says, agorism is almost any side business or self-sustained hobby. Correct. I have a friend named David. It's that guy, my buddy David. And his wife and he have this concept that any hobby must pay for itself. So he's big into fish like I am, so he sells a few fish a year to yuppies, pays for all the food. Doesn't really make any money, but I'm sure he's not putting that down on his, you know, extended income or extra income or tips or some shit. That's a perfect example. Most people are already doing this. So I hope this gives you a new way to look at it and gets your creative juices flowing. And you understand that what we're talking about is not breaking the law for the sake of breaking law, or bending the law for the sake of bending the law, or doing it just to give the middle finger to government. What we're talking about is carving out opportunity in a place where it's sitting right there if you structure it right in a way that doesn't result in, like, the ATF, you know, coming out of helicopters on ropes and kicking your windows in and taking you to prison. That's no good. There's so much kind of low-hanging, ripe fruit, low-risk, good reward, or long, like, let's say that the risk directly offsets the reward in a fine. But that's assuming you get caught in your first month. So let's say you can make $500 a month. You get caught, shut down, they give you a $500 fine. It's a wash. You tried it. Maybe you do what John Bush did and you figure out, how do I structure it? You even talk to the person who brought you the fine. Well, how could I do this? Most of them will tell you, including, like, but if I did this, would it still be illegal? Sometimes I get really mad when you ask that question. Like, but what if we called the raw milk a soil amendment and we put a label on it saying it was only for a soil amendment and to keep it refrigerated so it'll be fresh when you put it on the soil, and specifically that you're not allowed to use it in a manner inconsistent with its labeling? Like, what if we did that? The shaking, the red face, the anger, the going away. That tells you, well, we can't do anything anymore. So then maybe you do that. I'm just saying, you have to be good at status jujitsu to make this work. But it does matter. And even people that have regular businesses, full-time jobs, etc., there's a place for this strategy in your life. And the reason I love it more than not paying taxes or being able to run a business that you otherwise wouldn't be able to run, or even using it as an on-ramp like my friend Kathy from New Jersey, who ended up with a multi six-figure pet sitting business, is completely legit. Books done, you know, Schedule C filed on the taxes, deductions, all of it, but could have never got there without taking the agorist on-ramp to it. But what I love beyond all that is, what is the foundation of human relationships in the world? Have you ever thought about that? What is the foundation, especially beyond the family, or beyond the local little tiny village that coalesced? What is the bridge when we were small settlements only, no big cities? Village A and Village B. They, commerce, 229 Mick has it perfectly. That's the word, not even just the idea, that's the exact word I wanted to hear, commerce. Because Village A and Village B have two ways, and really only, well, three ways they can interact. Isolationism. You take that area, we take this area, we don't fuck with your resources, you don't fuck with ours, and we'll leave each other alone and pretend we don't exist. That's one. Two is conflict. We will fight to see who the dominant force is that will control the resources, or we will do quid pro quo. We will do value for value exchange. We will have commerce. We're really good at hunting. We have lots of dried meat. You're really good at growing things. You have lots of corn and grain. We will trade. So we talk all the time about community. Well, the tightest communities have commerce within the community. The workshop I do every year, there'll be 100 people here damn near when it's all said and done with staff and everything. Let's say 80. You know, one of the things people look forward to the most? Barter blanket. Why? Because it's not what you can get or what you got or what you got rid of. It's the whole experience. I've seen, there's a word I'm looking for right there. Trust. Aegis says trust. Trust comes. Let me tell you an example of what I've seen with this. I've seen some pretty cutthroat deals on Barter Blanket. I've seen somebody put some shit down, and everybody's like, oh, I want that, and, like, they really go at each other on trying to be the guy that wins it. And it's always good in the end. And I've definitely seen that stuff happen, but I've also seen this happen. I've seen somebody like Nick Ferguson say, I'm going to do 2 hours of permaculture consulting. Go. He usually would excel it a little bit. This is why I usually charge for it, whatever. But, you know, he's basically, that's his offer. And I've seen four people make really good exchange offers. And I've seen Nick go, all right, everybody pick your stuff up. And everybody's head kind of goes down. And they figure, like, he doesn't want any of it. Because you don't have to take a deal. You take the deal you want. And then he goes, well, what I'm going to do is every single person that made an offer, you get to keep what you have, and I'm still going to do it. And I'm still going to do it. I've seen a person that offered out their Airbnb. Nobody took it. And one person said, I just really don't have anything to offer for it. And I saw that person turn around and say, if you use, I'll give you some dates that it never gets rented. You can just use it. You just pay the cleaning fee that I pay my cleaner, and you can just have it. That kind of trust, that comes from commerce. One of the best agorists I ever knew, and this is back in my days working for Muskrat Purcell and all that, was a guy I've told stories about. Buddy Shoemaker, homemade wine guy. This was, if you've ever heard the song Dust on the Bottle, he was that freaking dude. And his deal was, you bring me shit, I make as much wine as I can. Let's say I get 10 bottles out of the shit you bring me. I give you 5 of them. That dude could call anyone in Schuylkill County and say, I need a favor, and it was going to happen. And if he didn't know somebody to do the thing that needed doing, he knew somebody that would know somebody. He'd say, oh, I'll call Andy Slifko. I bet you he'll know. And turn around and be like, yeah, I know a guy that can do that. Hold on. And put him in touch with him. And you didn't say no to Buddy Shoemaker. You just didn't do it. He had so much freaking goodwill, but it was agorism. Man never took a dollar from anybody that we know of, okay? I'm just saying, like, that if he needed something, a couple bottles of Biff Spirico's grape wine and a couple bottles of the Debski's raspberry wine, and he could get it done. I'm not saying he took money. I'm saying that whatever he needed done, he had a form of payment for, and he loved making wine. That is what happens when we start relying on each other instead of the system. And that's what agorism really is. It is a form of commerce. It is working in loopholes. It is working on the interactive edge of gray and black markets, okay? It is all of those things. But what it is more than anything else is forming relationships with people and establishing trust and building community. That's what it's really all about. That's the way you should build any business. That's my advice. If you're building business in 2024, you got modern problems. And remember the old saying, modern problems require modern solutions? I don't think so. I think there's places for modern solutions like better living through chemistry or better living through technology, et cetera. Bitcoin is a modern solution. But I think most modern problems, even if they involve some modern technology or something like that, the real solution is yesterday's solutions. You don't think if you brought Buddy Shoemaker forward in time and gave his ass access to the fucking internet, that dude would probably have become a multimillionaire. Could you imagine a Buddy Shoemaker with a YouTube channel about how to make wine out of parsley? Yeah, he used to make parsley wine. I have no idea how the hell to make parsley wine. I wish I knew. I wish I would have learned from him. He used to make sake. He made his own koji, the whole thing, right? He was an amazing old dude. He would take yesterday's networking and marry it with today's technology. That's what that man would do today. I guarantee it. Anyway, with that, let's go ahead and wrap things up. I want to talk to you about our item of the day today and some other stuff. First of all, today I want to tell you that Prime Days apparently have started. I hadn't realized this, and I should, because part of my business is I do reviews on Amazon.com. I've got a post out, and there's a link in the video notes below if you're on the video as well, and there's a link that will be in the audio notes when the audio goes out for this podcast in just a bit. that goes to this post right here. And it just turns out that a lot of things that I recommended over the years are on sale today. Victorinox boning knives, a couple different sous vide cookers, the Anker Astro E7 portable charger, which is the beast of all chargers. That thing's marked down to $42. That is a hell of a deal. Knipex Cobra pliers are on sale. DeWalt has some stuff on sale. Almost Anker is like my favorite electronics manufacturer. Like half the shit they make is knocked down like 40-50% today. And it's also a good day to check out the Renewed store and the Amazon outlet. All that information's there. And then the other thing I want to talk about real quick, because I talked about this yesterday briefly, because our show yesterday went really long, and I didn't want to go too deep into this, but these Orbit tripod impact sprinklers, these things are awesome. And they are a hell of a good price. And I wanted to actually, you know, my grandson did a fantastic job, if you watch that video, of showing how you do all the adjustments. But I wanted to, and I know if you're listening to the audio, it might be hard to follow what I'm saying, and you might want to pull up this video for today's episode. Jump to about 1 hour, 25 minutes in, and you'll see this part of it. But this is an impact sprinkler head right here. And I go way back with these. I was a little kid. My grandpa taught me all about these suckers right here. They are not the perfect form of irrigation for all needs, but to me, they are the most flexible form of irrigation, especially for large areas, and they are incredibly adjustable. Most people are familiar with these. My grandpa always called them whirly birds. I think a lot of people do, but they're called an impact because this little arm right here impacts, and it moves, and it's the one that goes whack, 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 like that, right? Okay, what most people don't know is those two different speeds actually have a purpose. The slow, steady click, click, click with that water, that's when that thing's shooting way far out there, and it's dropping most of the moisture in the last 50% of the arc, so the furthest distance, like about half the distance out, almost no waterfalls. When it trips and comes back the other way and it runs really, really fast, it does a lot more disturbance and the water falls right up to the base. So you have basically two irrigation zones going on, and so everything gets irrigated. Under that type of usage, they have a range of about 280 degrees of coverage. And that's handled by two little adjusters that are right here. I'll show you just a second. Okay, there they are right there, there and there. And those set how far the head can articulate back and forth. But what most people do not know is the way they actually work. And the way they actually work is there's another little clip, and it's right there on the back side. See that little clip right there? That little clip, when that unit is moving, when that clip comes up against this clip, it trips things, and it changes the direction. So when you hit that clip, you can actually hear, probably, listen. That's that little clip. It's being impacted. So that would be, let's, if that's fast, that's slow. This is fast, this is slow. So when you take that clip and you lift it up, it will never hit the restrictor. So now the head will spin completely around in circles. It will just keep going 360 degrees. Usually when that happens, what's going to happen, it's going to go on a rapid and just keeps going around and around and around. You want it rapid usually because now it's going to water back to the base of the sprinkler. It's not going to shoot way out on that slow arc. If you wanted it to, actually you can just manually trip it over to the other side and it would go further out, but then it's not going to be watering back. I don't know why you'd want to do that, but maybe you would. But that's all it is. But there's more. But wait, there's more. It's an infomercial today. One is this little screw. I always try to put this in front of the computer and forget my camera's up here. This little screw, you can turn by hand. See how the end of it comes further out? Well, what that does is, let me see, right there is the nozzle, and it hits the screw. That disrupts the stream, and it reduces the length and is more efficient at putting more water close. It also has a little gate. It's a little gate right here. Let's see. Right there. This little guy right here, if you raise this up, it also can interfere and disrupt the stream. And all of those things together allow you to water really far out in a very tight area, really far out in a very wide area, 360 degrees in a very constricted area. These are great beyond the fact that the one I'm recommending has a tripod, this just type of irrigation. This was my grandfather loved these because I'm not talking about the one that lived down the road from Buddy right now. My other grandfather loved these. He was a lawn guy. Raleigh, St. Augustine grass, paid to have a well put in the suburbs so he could water his lawn, kept it like a golf course. And he lived by these things. That's why I know so damn much about them. Well, the thing about that tripod one that's the item of the day, they're $50. Totally worth it. That tripod lets you elevate them, drop them down, put them on crooked ground. Somebody asked me, why don't you like the step-in ones? Because I can't get them in the ground, right? A lot of people have hard ground. It's hard to get them in the ground. Just maximum flexibility. But that tripod probably ain't going to ever go bad unless you really are abusive with it. It's just a metal tripod. What goes bad over time are these, and that's why you want to buy brass ones. Brass is much more resistant to corrosion than zinc. Zinc is brass and copper and other things in the alloy. And so brass is much more corrosion resistant, so this head's going to last longer. But you can buy this head by itself, like it's sitting in my hand right now, for $16. When you get the tripod sprinkler, if you do, these just screw right out. I bought the first one from Lowe's. I found it. My wife liked it. We got one. We loved it. Checked Amazon. They're actually $5 less at Amazon than Lowe's. Ordered another one from Amazon. The Amazon one came with the head off. You have to screw it on. That's all the assembly required when you order it. But you can buy it, so $50, but the head wears out, buy a new one for $15 and keep using it. But like I'm saying, anything that'll fit, any female fitting, sorry liberals, any female fitting that will house this male fitting, it can be screwed into, little O-ring there to prevent leakage. So you could plumb in stand-up pipes, permanently install these on a timer-based system and do all that yourself. You could even do that for people and charge them money between me, you, and the fence post. So just a little extra agorism right there at the end. Maybe giving away all the free education I do is a form of agorism. I don't know. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed today's show. Got to go see what the train wreck was with my granddaughter. That all seems to calm down now, though, and get the audio version of this show up. Tomorrow we have an interview, and I will have a gentleman on tomorrow I'm really excited to talk to you guys about with. His name is Vance Crow. He does a podcast on a lot of different things that, like, agorism would be, agriculture, lifestyle design, entrepreneurship. He had me on his show a couple months ago. And when we got done, he said, can I trouble you for a minute and ask you some questions about business? And he told me that his podcast really isn't his core business. It's one way he promotes his core business. But his core business is a company called Legacy Interviews. And you can find his site if you want to at legacyinterviews.com. And what Vance does, he actually has people come into his studio to do this. This would be something you'd get like your dad or your grandfather to do. And they go over their life and they tell the stories of their life and they record it in professional audio and video and get it all together so that you leave behind to your family your story. That is very cool. It's something near and dear to my heart. I tried to start a thing called Gen Forward years ago that ended up not really working out. It was something I didn't have the technology skills to build, and my partners that were supposed to build it didn't do it, right? So it never really became what I envisioned it to be, but it was a way to do this kind of by yourself. This is done professionally by somebody else, and this is what sold me. He said, I get these folks comfortable because a lot of people aren't comfortable in front of a camera and a microphone and all that. I get them comfortable, and then I make sure we talk about their mistakes and their failures as much as their successes, because that's the real value you leave behind. And he said, how can I get more exposure for my business? And I said, go to my site and fill out a guest form, because that's the kind of shit that my audience will support. So I'm going to bring Vance on tomorrow to talk about that. And with that, I'll catch you guys tomorrow. Have a good evening.
They said you should have a house, be a American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way. You don't have to be Revolution.